Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at thomisticinstitute.org.
Starting with a story, and it takes place about 800 years ago, on the 6th of December, 1273, when Friar Thomas Aquinas was celebrating his morning mass, as was his usual custom. However, something about that mass that day was different. So a witness at his subsequent process of canonization would testify that while Brother Thomas was saying his mass one morning, this morning, in the chapel of St. Nicholas at Naples, something happened which profoundly affected and altered him. After mass, he refused to write or dictate, indeed, to put away all his writing materials. What was it that had affected this erudite man of towering intellect that morning in December 1273? Did he suffer a nervous breakdown? Had a life of strain and constant study and application of himself finally get to him? Up until this point, St. Thomas had worked together with his secretaries, four of whom he dictated to at the one time, we are told, to produce about 8 million words of work. That's about 68,000 words per day in the short span of his career. So basically an academic article per day or a short book every month. His daily regime never changed. He rose early. He chanted the Divine Office with his brothers in community, celebrated his own mass, and then served the mass of one of the community. After meditation, he would retire then to his cell to begin to read and to write. And in an atmosphere of a Dominican convent, especially in the medieval context, distractions were non-existent. Silence was kept as a rule, even outside of the times of recreation. That was the only time the friars would tend to speak unless it were absolutely necessary. So that provided an atmosphere of intense concentration, which was ideal for study and indeed for the search for truth. But on that morning of the 6th of December, 1273, a day which happened to be towards the end of Thomas's life, something had changed. During the mass itself, Thomas's socius, think assistant or secretary, who was a man called Brother Reginald, saw him transfixed at a very crucial point in the mass. Some other witnesses even testified that Thomas levitated above the ground, and it lasted for several moments. When he finished his mass, he retired immediately to his cell. Reginald thought he just wants to get a head start on the day's work. He's very close to finishing his magnum opus. I'm sure you may have heard of it, the Summa Theologiae. But when he brought him his writing materials, Thomas refused to write. He brought him all these papers, brought him his pills or whatever they would have used in the medieval times, his ink, Thomas said no. And when Reginald pressed him, you know, he said, but Friar Thomas, you know, think of all the people that you will benefit from your work. You know, you're so close to finishing this great work, the Summa Theologiae. And Thomas said that, Reginald, I cannot. All that I have written seems to me like straw in comparison to the things I have seen. What I want to convey to you is that St. Thomas had a profound experience of reality. He was given a vision in that moment of the real, something which caused him to subsequently lose a lot of interest in the things of this passing world. After all his years of intense effort and soul-bending work, Thomas was rewarded with this vision. And this is what a search, an honest and a sincere search for the truth can do to people. Because we can think of other examples, like Blaise Pascal, who after years of laborious effort was rewarded with this vision, this contemplative vision of a burning flame. However, you and I'm guessing, have not spent such years in constant research and study. We have not been so prodigiously productive. And dare I say it, to our shame, we have not led a life of intense prayer as did St. Thomas. What's more, we have AI. So, we have to wrestle with this problem of artificial intelligence, which promises us so much, but which may also take away an awful lot more. It promises to take away the need for that great intellectual labor. Should we allow it? Or how are we to approach it at all? So, like anyone would in preparing this talk, I asked AI, and, well, you know thy enemy, you know, is what they say, isn't it? So when I asked AI, why should I keep studying since you exist and since you're so smart, it told me basically three things. So it said that, firstly, that study is part of the human experience, yada, 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 very like a pep talk, impassioned kind of speech. But it singled out three things for me, okay? It says you need to study to be able to understand, to become fulfilled as a person, and to learn how to think. And I thought, actually, that's not a bad way to structure this talk. So that is what I've done. So what we are going to do is look a little bit at what AI is, and also, more importantly, what it is not. Then we're going to look at what reality is, what truly understanding means. Then have a quick look at the process of study and how we are to actually become fulfilled through this crucial process. Then what AI calls really thinking, which I like to call true knowledge, and how true knowledge can come to us through real thinking and learning how to think. Then we'll conclude. So what is AI? The great philosopher Plato famously warned against that mod con handwriting. Okay. In his work, The Phaedrus, the Greek god Phaeuth invents writing and presents it to the king of Egypt, a man called Thamos, and tells him that this will make people very wise. But Thamos disagrees. And Thamos says this: this invention, handwriting, will produce forgetfulness in the minds of those who learn to use it, because they will not practice their memory. They will trust to the external written characters and not remember of themselves. Perhaps Plato had a point. In his day, poets could teach themselves to learn off by heart the entire corpus of Homer's Iliad and his Odyssey, so that they could recite it at heart. So Plato's point is really that people will just appear to be wise. In actual fact, those poets are really just appearing to be wise. They haven't really understood. They're like fancy parrots. They've devoured this gigantic corpus of a poem, and now they're able to repeat it back to you, like a parrot. Okay. But Plato still has a point, and we have to address it in the context of AI. I think AI is the handwriting of our day. So, of course, asking AI what it actually is, again, you know, relying on all that, and hoping that worries about AI causing us to become mindless automatons is just alarmism, I turned to AI for help. And for reassurance, this is what people do these days, yeah? What we know is that it is extremely powerful, and it's becoming more so. It is able to recognize patterns, predict outcomes, analyze vast quantities of data at speeds which are mind-boggling, especially for minds like you and mine. It's even able to evolve its own algorithms based on what you teach it. For instance, and this is no word of a lie, the first time I have used AI was 1 week ago in preparing this talk. Okay, I am a complete, to the great shame of my father who worked in computer software his whole life, I am a total technophobe. Okay, I actually incline towards the belief that it makes our lives more complicated and more stressful. Okay, might be controversial, but for me, everything breaks down when I need it the most. I turned to AI 1 week ago and I started to ask it about Aquinas. Now, every single time that I ask it about any other question that pops into my head, it says, do you want to know what Aquinas would have thought about that? And I say, stop reading my thoughts. It's really creepy. AI is being used in all kinds of areas, okay? Agriculture, security, finance, healthcare, warfare, and yes, education. Progress and feats are astounding, no doubt, have made the lives of many easier. But this is what it has to say for itself. What are you? I asked it. That's a great question and a deep one. AI always affirms you. Have you noticed that? It's always trying to meddle with your psychology. You know, you're so great. You're so wonderful. Keep asking me questions. I'm intelligent in a limited, specialized way. I can reason, solve problems, learn patterns from data, and generate coherent ideas or explanations. But my intelligence is synthetic, not conscious or self-aware. I don't feel emotions or have personal experiences. I process information and generate responses that make sense based on what I've learned. Do you want to know what Aquinas thinks about that? If you're asking how smart I am compared to a human, I can process and recall huge amounts of information instantly. I'm very good at logic, language. I have tested AI in 4 different languages. It's flawless. Pattern recognition, structured reasoning, but I lack intuition, creativity born from experience, and genuine understanding of meaning beyond patterns. So given these self-declared facts, do we stop studying? You will be shocked to find out that my answer is no, that we should keep studying, okay? And there are several reasons for this. Most fundamentally, it has to do with what AI is not. It's not intelligence. The intelligence of a human being, I will submit to you, is something immaterial. It's not made up of stuff. It's not made up of electricity. Okay? It depends upon material, your brain, for its operation. But to say that, therefore, the immaterial side doesn't exist is a bit like an argument which goes as follows. A violinist plays the violin. When the violin breaks, the violinist doesn't exist. So people who have incurred brain injury cannot obviously use their minds, at least to the fullest extent. But this does not mean that your mind is something material itself. We can analyze this further by recognizing the fact that you can grasp concepts. Okay? You can grasp the concept, for instance, that all men are mortal. Yeah? All men are going to die. That is a universal concept, okay? And whether I speak in different languages or communicate that to you in sign language, it's something independent of our minds. It's a truth which is there, and you partake of it, you participate in it through your understanding. Further, you can unite it to other concepts, okay? The concept of men, you've united with the concept of mortality. That's a proposition, okay? All men are mortal. It's either true or false. And we know that it's true. You can take other propositions and use those to form arguments, such as all men are mortal. Father Chris is a man. Therefore, Father Chris is mortal. This is an argument. AI can follow this. It can mimic it, but it cannot grasp it in the way that you and I can, because your intellect is immaterial. More examples. You can grasp what a triangle is, okay, without becoming a triangle. Yeah? You can see triangles written in the world. Yeah? You can see examples of triangle in matter. And you can abstract from them what triangularity is. That doesn't mean you become a triangle. That concept will exist even if there are no examples of triangles in the world, in matter. And furthermore, your thought about triangles cannot be cut in half. So when I arrived here in Galway, the very second that I pulled into the Claddagh Church, it did what it always does to me in Galway. It rained, right? Every single day. The thought that I had, it's raining again, is a thing. But it cannot be cut in half. It's not extendable. Yeah? I can't take it and put it out here as my thought. There is a common belief that our minds are just like computers, that the brain is the hardware and your mind is a bit like software. This is totally fallacious. To be a computer is to depend on a human mind. Okay, we can talk more about that later on if you wish. But computers, by definition, have been programmed by a human intellect, which again is immaterial and which is, in actual fact, free. The immateriality of your intellect is the basis of your freedom. Both you're deciding to do whatever you want, yeah? Because if your mind is only made up of matter, then it's only a series of chemical reactions which is going on, and those chemical reactions will always result in the same thing. So you can't be free unless your intellect is immaterial. But also, this is the reason why, as Catholics, I would understand as a Catholic and a Catholic priest, is that you can be perfected. You have freedom to be perfected because your intellect makes you made in the image and likeness of God. That's what we mean by image and likeness, by the way. The image of God is the fact that you have a mind and a will, just like God has a mind and a will. In actual fact, God is his mind and his will. But likeness comes from your capacity to receive God's grace and be lifted up even above your nature and made to be like God, divinized. But that's not possible unless you have an intellect and a will and that they are immaterial. Okay, moreover, your minds are also conditioned by more than mere data. Okay, you are embodied. So all my chat about your mind being immaterial, you are also a body-soul composite. Okay, you're not meant to be some abstract ghost flying out here outside of your body. Okay, like Descartes would have understood. You are body and soul composite. Those things are two sides of the same coin. Okay, your immaterial soul and your material body are totally intertwined. Okay, they're dependent upon each other for their existence, normally. So that means that when you learn and when you study, you bring to all that experience all of your background, your emotions, your reactions to things, yeah? Not just the passive reception of sense data, which is what the use of AI does tend to teach us. But also, again, you can transcend that material experience by the fact that you have a soul. You have also been given a relationality, which is, I would argue, based on the image of the Blessed Trinity. You can relate to another person as a real thing and a real person, another intellect, another will, another heart. Yeah, you can love. You can make decisions, free decisions, for the good of that other people, of those other people. So this is far more, therefore, than the mere acquisition and analysis of facts, which is what AI tends to do. Real intelligence is an appreciation of these universal concepts I've been talking about. Okay, truth, beauty, goodness, law. AI can mimic these things. It can perform tasks and do that very powerfully and very, very quickly. But it remains to say that it depends for its very being on human intelligence. What tends to happen with us is we become duped by how powerful it is, and then to conclude, look at what it can do, it must be intelligent. But this is a bit like looking at what Penn and Teller do and saying, look at what they can do, magic must be real. There is nothing intelligent about AI or computers. It just seems that way. It's simulating intelligence by its performance of tasks. It's confined to a logical and mathematical framework. Ask it, it will admit it itself. A system of algorithms, therefore, it doesn't actually really learn in the way that you and I do. It might adopt, evolve, change itself, suit the needs as it sees, but it remains fixed, whereas you and I have minds which grow organically, thanks to the body and soul composite. So let's not get drawn into a functionalist perspective. Let's not be so duped by the amazing things that something appears to be able to do and therefore conclude that it is something it is not. Instead, try to think of intelligence the way I was harping on about at the start, with Aquinas encountering reality. Okay? Artificial intelligence, by definition, is not natural. That's not a bad thing, but it is an artifact. That's a truth. Okay? It tends to be that in the history of humanity, broad statement and claim perhaps, but the big strides that tend to come tend to come from interactions with nature. Okay, and there is good reason for this. We can talk about studies which abound, which show the calming effects and the beneficial effects of walks in nature in the countryside and conversations with human friends. But in actual fact, things like forests and mountains and trees and lakes and these things, they don't invade your mind. At least until you wrestle with them. You have to go hunting for these things. You have to engage with them. You have to activate your mind in order to squeeze the reality and the truth out of these things. AI does not do this. It gives you a constant flood of data where you become passive instead of active. We tend to sit back, take the foot off the accelerator, and become, well, lazy. Secondly, as I have kept saying, your minds are made for the real. So we've already said that your minds hunger for truth, okay? How do we define truth? It's a correspondence of what is in your mind to what is in reality. Therefore, truth is just a certain aspect of being, of existence, of what is. Whatever is, as grasped by your mind, is truth. Ultimately, this happens when we encounter God in creation. That's why the Catholic Church has always held that God can be reasoned to. We can conclude that God exists even without faith, simply by using reason. Do you get the impression that AI is causing you to miss out on reality? It's not a criticism of AI per se. It's not designed to give you reality. It's simply of a recognition of the fact that it can't rival reality. In fact, there is evidence that AI makes people overestimate their own abilities because you tend to start to mimic what is in front of you. This is your mind molding itself by what is there. So overuse of AI, especially when we should be studying, tends to make us think that we are smarter than we are. And that actually can be quite problematic. We've also seen the problem of these deepfakes and not knowing what reality actually is. And this is a problem if study for us and learning is an encounter with reality. Most importantly, reality is what will lead to wonder, okay? Wondering at these things. So the example I like to give is peeing. So as Sean very kindly mentioned, my background is in medicine. And one of the great times that I recognized how beautiful the human body is actually recognizing how beautiful it is when you pee. So this is obviously a kidney. And just to kind of talk you through this, those of you who have no idea, so here we have unfiltered, so dirty blood, okay, carrying a lot of waste products will be forced in here, okay? And then if you take this little snapshot here and blow it way up, you'll get this thing called the nephron. So there are about 1 million of these in each of your kidneys, two of which you should have ordinarily, okay? So here's the unfiltered blood, helpfully coloured in red, and it's fired in here at a higher pressure than when it leaves. What happens is then you get this glomerulus in this nice circular thing called the Bowman's capsule, and all of the nasty stuff is taken out, okay, together with some of the stuff that you need, and it passes through this proximal convoluted tubule, okay, and your body begins to reabsorb the good stuff and leave behind the waste. And it does this by a process called microfiltration in this thing here, which is called the loop of Henle. So all the filtrate tends to travel down. You can see it gets narrower and narrower. And what happens is here, water and fluid is brought out, so it gets more and more concentrated. But then through the application of certain hormones, like antidiuretic hormone and aldosterone, your body can actually pump out salt and make it less concentrated, depending on how much water is in your body and how much you need to keep a hold of. Okay, and the result is very beautiful. Urine. Your body has a built-in mechanism, therefore, to be able to regulate its own fluid status, okay? It's not an experiment I recommend, but if you deprive yourself of fluids, you will see that your urine will become more and more yellow, okay? It's not a good thing, not healthy, but it's your body kicking in its metabolism, its mechanism in order to keep hold of your fluids. This is beautiful. AI can give me charts. AI can tell me facts. But until I actually cut up a kidney and went through the laborious process of looking at it under the microscope and learning about it through a reasoned application, I couldn't grasp that, you know. AI will give you the charts on command and instantly, and your reaction will be, oh yeah. If you go through a process of weeks, like I did before AI, of looking at kidneys and nephrons and conducting experiments, the result at the end will be wonder. And you can apply that to anything you study, apart from maybe accounting, which is just really dull. Science, you know, literature, languages, the things we can do with words and references. Mathematics, eternal truths of mathematics, which exist whether or not we do, and which give you a glimpse into God's blueprint for the universe and how he has structured it. This is important, but this is what only study will get you. The truth is not ours, okay? We discover it, we don't invent it. AI doesn't give it to us on a platter. We really have to get out there, and it's a wee bit like, you know, go and touch grass. Isn't that a meme that all the Gen Z say? There's a lot of truth in it, you know. It's very, very good for you to go out there and into nature for a start, and delving into your studies in a way that might seem laborious, but which does pay off. Truth is stranger than fiction, Mark Twain said, riffing off a line in Shakespeare. We invent fiction to suit our fancy. We just discover the truth. Therefore, the process is very important. This is a scene from which classic work of literature turned into one of the most popular movies of all time about 20, 25 years ago. Does anybody know? Correct, thank you. Why is it that the Eagles don't just come and bring Frodo and all the Fellowship over to Mordor so they can drop the ring into Mount Doom and, you know, it's done? It's not that simple. So we can ask AI to give us many, many fanboy arguments as to why this didn't happen. My own personal favorite is that the Eagles are like really dignified creatures, okay? I think who's actually pictured here is the king of the Eagles. Okay, they have a whole hierarchy and a structure. They live way up on top of the mountains, and they're very aloof, okay? They're not like involved in the affairs of men. It's kind of beneath them, whatever else. But they will swoop in to rescue people when it's the right thing to do. But they're not the Uber service of Middle-earth, okay? You can't just call an eagle and be like, take me to Mordor. You see what's happening? You're adding depth. You're adding richness. Simply by that one theory, and there are many others, okay? And my point is that the process is important. If we didn't have the walking to Mount Doom and all of the dangers that it involved, you wouldn't have an epic book to enjoy, or movie, okay? So it's important, it might seem like a trite example, but it's a way of illustrating to you that the process is important, concentration is important, attention is important. When social media arrived, there also came a tide of companies who began to buy and sell attention. Scrolling through these things, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, whatever, it bombards you with information, yeah? You know this by now. And the companies behind this have a vested interest in monopolizing your dopamine release and hooking you on the affirmation that it gives you. What happens then is, besides the fact you get addicted to dopamine, you cease to become able to like form coherent thoughts. So one blogger I came across as I was scrolling said, I sometimes feel like my incessant scrolling whittles my neural pathways so that I can only sustain thoughts that are as fragmented and jumpy as a newsfeed. Why is this? It's because your mind mirrors what's in front of it. If you give it nothing but constant stimulation, it will become jumpy, it will become anxious, flighty, superficial. Your mind is shaped by what is in front of it. So if you want coherency and the ability to concentrate and give attention to the world, you have to apply it in a process of study. The philosopher Simone Weil spoke of attention as a radical, selfless openness to reality, generosity of self. Simone Weil was actually in favour of sitting for a long time, usually in nature, sometimes just in her room when she wasn't that well, she was quite sickly, and just waiting for inspiration to come. We all know about the need for silence in our lives. If we don't have silence, we won't be filled with reality. You know, constant noise causes us instability, anxiety, dissipation of our energies in a million futile ways. When we substitute AI for genuine study, this tends to happen to us. Yeah. We lose the ability to coherently engage with reality the way Simone Weil would recommend that we do. And a lot of the time it was just sitting quietly. You've heard that famous saying that it's really the root of all man's unhappiness, his inability to sit quietly in a room. It's Pascal in his Meditations, you know. He called it divertissement. He said, you know, if only we could just sit, be bored, you know. But instead we're constantly chasing, not the truth, but entertainment, pleasure, kickback. And the reason for this is that AI, again, floods us with information. Its processing power, guys, is so enormous. It's beyond anything we could have imagined. It's more than even drinking from a fire hose. It's too much for the mind to handle. All of you, I'm sure, have come across some YouTube short of some influencer who claims to get up at 3 a.m. and read 5 books a day. Fool! Right? Fool! Firstly, you need your sleep. Secondly, and trust me, I'm a doctor. Secondly, most of the great geniuses of our world would encourage you to read little. What? Read little. Okay? Do read. Okay? It's not an excuse to be like, okay, reading for half an hour, 5 hours of YouTube. No. Choose your reading well. Okay? Choose it well, engage with it thoroughly, and come to know it. It's no use reading 5 books a day at warp speed just so you can close them and say, ha, done, kick back, I read that. Oh yeah, what was it about? Don't know. Ask AI, okay? I once complained to a mentor of mine, he's still a friend. I think I was in seminary at the time, and I was thinking, there's so much to read in so little time, you know? I want it all in here. I want to flood my mind with this. And he said, you're not reading to get to the end. You're not reading to get to the end. There's no day where you wake up, finish the last few pages and go, that's it, done. All of the books are read. I've read all the words, all of them. You can't do that. AI and ChatGPT give you the impression that you can absorb all of this data. You can't. You have a limited time on this earth. We have to use it wisely, and that includes choosing our reading and spending time with it. If you have to spend 3 months at the same paragraph of a book, so be it, as long as it benefits you, as long as it changes you. Better that than reading 40 books and not knowing what you've read after it. Capiche? So do read, but you're not reading to get to the end, okay? Also, genius moments don't come with AI. That's my contention. Genius moments throughout history come at the end of a long, laborious process which seems to be fruitless. Who's this guy? Archimedes, right? The famous Eureka moment. Didn't just wake up one day and get in the bath. He'd been wrestling with the problem of the king's crown for like weeks and months. you know, squeezing the blood from a stone, like, how does this work? The squeeze is important, okay? Others, like Alexander Fleming, okay, happened upon penicillin by accident. But before that, he'd been, like, mind-boggling, okay? He'd been going through this process. Watson and Crick, DNA double helix, okay? The discovery of it was just like this, okay? It's what the philosopher Bernard Lonergan, Jesuit, calls insight, yeah? Insight, yeah? But you have to wrestle with it until that moment comes. It's not just a simple case of click, zzz, now I'm a genius. Do you get me? It comes as a result of you expending that energy. There is reward for that process. And there's good reason for that. Isn't she gorgeous? I just let you enjoy a picture of my parents' Labrador for a few more seconds. So this is Daisy, okay? I probably overuse her in a lot of my talks. Daisy looks like nothing more, I'm sure you'll be shocked to find, than chasing a ball, right? Okay, Daisy's not an intelligent animal. She just, it's in her nature, right? It's in her essence to chase things, particularly round things, and bring them back to me or to my father or mother or whoever it is with a big smile on her face, okay? When she's chasing balls, she is fulfilling the potential which is written in her. It's hardwired in her essence, in her DNA even, okay, if you want to call it that, in her nature, to chase balls and bring them back to us, yeah? When she does it, she's happy because she's flourishing. It's in your nature to study, okay? So when you study, when you chase, not tennis balls, but the truth, okay, you are flourishing. You're using that mind that God gave you. You're putting it to use. AI seems like a great way to lose that precious ability. Yeah? It will become wasted and atrophied like a muscle which is never used. You can go to the gym and watch people do press-ups. You won't grow big and strong through doing that. Okay? You have to go and apply yourself. So therefore, you and I have a desire for truth. It's written within us. Okay? And it's not something we could like surgically remove. It's an appetite. Like your desire for food or warmth or good company, right? So, therefore, according to St. Thomas, anyway, we need a virtue to regulate this because appetites are disordered, yeah? How many times have you, like, have you said, okay, one piece of cake, okay, just maybe two, maybe five. Is 10, is that, like, criminal or, you know? With all our appetites, this is the problem. We can't help ourselves, okay? That's why we have to discipline ourselves. The same is true for your hunger for truth. It becomes disordered, right? So Aquinas names this virtue, okay? A virtue is like a power which you develop through repeated use, okay? And so that good acts according to your reason, become like second nature, become easy, yeah? But you have to practice it and you have to repeatedly. Things like courage, okay? Random people don't just happen across burning buildings and run inside to save screaming children just on the off chance. They have repeatedly practiced acts, smaller acts of courage, so that when the big act comes along, they can kick themselves into it with a lot of ease, okay? So Aquinas terms this virtue, particularly for your desire for truth, studiositas, in his beautiful medieval Latin. Studiousness, yeah? Think about when you sit down to do an intellectual task, right, an essay. After 16 or 17 minutes, check the number of tabs on your laptop. If it's more than two or three, you need to grow in studiositas, okay? You don't need to know the history of the Portuguese flag, I am betting, in order to do your essay or your presentation or whatever it might be, okay? A lack of studiositas, an unregulated desire for truth, will manifest in this kind of way. Also in our tendency in our culture today to just talk about things constantly through the media. Just constant chat. 24-hour news channels and just coverage of every little event. Yeah. Or reality TV shows where people are paid a lot of money to sit and do nothing so that you can watch them. Okay. Or like, Things like this, your consumption of media and these things, this is an acquiring of truth. You're watching a reality TV show. You are acquiring truth. It is true that these people are doing nothing or talking nonsense all day long, okay? But it's of no relevance to you at that time, okay? So even though you are acquiring truth, it needs to be regulated. It needs to be disciplined. It's truth which is useless to you at that time. And this has been a problem ever since the fall, right? Ever since Adam and Eve, you know. I wonder, does that fruit really give me, you know, that power that the serpent gave, you know? With the advent of the internet, the problem of curiositas became really an epidemic. And now with AI, it's going to become out of control because you have an unregulated appetite for truth, which you can just indulge constantly in AI, in curiositas, in truth that you don't need at that moment. It's too much of a risk, at least if it's not regulated. So perhaps then we are seeking knowledge which is beyond our means, yeah? Unregulated, out of order. And maybe the seeking of that knowledge is not actually good for us, not suited to our nature, okay? True knowledge is far more than the accumulation of facts and data. For Christians, at least, this is shown particularly in the person of Jesus Christ, who is our model in all things. Not just a model in the way Usain Bolt is a model for running fast, but Christ, according to classical theology, is an efficacious model. What this essentially means is that everything he touched by becoming human, he sanctified. And this included learning. It included study. Okay? So the Gospel of Luke tells us in the very beginning that he increased in wisdom and in stature when he's found in the temple by his parents, Mary and Joseph. And what that means is that Jesus was not born like Stewie Griffin in Family Guy, okay? Like a walking, talking kind of genius baby type thing. He willed freely to have an intellect which required growth, at least in one certain aspect, yeah? His, what we call his acquired intellect, needed to grow. He willed to learn about the world, again, through experience of reality. If he did it, therefore it's holy. And therefore, at least if you're Christian, it's something to try and emulate. Jesus had other types of knowledge as well. Okay, so again, classical theology will say that Jesus is both God and man. There's a divine nature and a human nature united in his personhood. But what that means is that he has divine knowledge. Okay, he has access to the knowledge, the only store of knowledge more powerful than ChatGPT at this stage, divine, okay, God's knowledge. He also has what's known as the beatific vision, okay? So by his human intellect, he sees directly into the mind of God. And that's important because we are called to share in that, and it only comes about through Christ, and if he doesn't have it, he can't give it. Anyway. Lastly, he has this type of knowledge called infused knowledge. This is more the type of knowledge which is proper to angels. Angels, again, according to classical theology, take it or leave it if you will, angels don't have to reason through the way we do, okay? When I talked about your mind, okay, you have an understanding which is filled with reality, filled with truth, and molded by this. But you also have a kind of an attack dog. That's your rationality. The thing that will go after truth. Yeah, like Daisy goes after the balls. And it'll search out. It'll reason between propositions. All men are mortal. Socrates or Father Chris is immortal. Therefore, you know, he's a man. Okay, it'll make that process for you. But the one, the first one, the one that is perfected, classical theologians will hold that Christ, because everything had to be perfect in him, will have a kind of an infused knowledge, which is, as I say, angelic knowledge. So it doesn't have to go through that process of ratiocination, going from step to step. It's just instantaneous. This is like the knowledge that AI gives us, or that we seek to have from AI. And it's not a hill I'm willing to die on, but it's just a thought that perhaps an infused form of knowledge, unless it is kind of given to us willingly by God, maybe it's not a good thing, you know? St. Thomas himself used to advise his disciples, alti ora non quasi eris. Use AI to translate. Seek not the things that are above you. You know, maybe there's something in that, in like human history, when we've gone beyond our limits, tends not to end well. In any case, what is not beyond us is genuine knowledge, acquired through a process, hard study, reasoning, which perfects our mind and indeed imitates the study that Christ himself undertook. So it's tempting to make that study like encyclopedic, again, you know, through AI, and just like know all the facts about everything. But that's kind of superficial knowledge. If we stick to our definition, which I hope you're with me, that knowledge and learning are being open to reality, then actual knowledge and learning come from a wide variety of experiences, an embodied existence, as opposed to being perfectly abstracted out of our muck and bullets situation. That's why two people who approach a problem at the same time, the same day and all the rest, they won't do it the same way, because they bring with it their own unique set of emotions and reactions and background knowledge and these things. That's what makes life interesting. But it boils down to the difference between cleverness and intelligence. If you're clever, you spend a lot of time in AI, you've absorbed a lot of the facts it has given you, and you've developed a way to fit them into scenarios. But that's still very superficial. It's still a good thing, but it's superficial. Intelligence, as I've been trying to labour, is more than that. It's about having intellectual tools and hardware so that you can approach future problems. Okay? So, again, this is Thomas, right? This is Thomas in his magister's chair, his teacher's chair, okay? The reason St. Thomas founded a school, not purposefully, but it just happens that disciples gather around him and other great features like this, is because they have certain insights and that their ideas provide a framework to approach reality generally and through which reality filters through. So I could use AI, for instance, to tell me all of the things that St. Thomas ever said, right? And then you can come along, and I could spend ages at it, and you could come along and be like, what did St. Thomas say about this? And like a parrot or an automaton, I could say, he said this, okay? Have I really grasped it? Have I really understood it? The alternative is to spend time myself exposing my mind to St. Thomas's ideas, okay? His school, things like everything begins and ends with God, or that faith and reason can never contradict each other because they come from the one source, or like the cause must always be greater than the effect, and I could go on. But these ideas, what I take on are the tools and his way of thinking, his mind. I become informed by Thomas's mind so that when I approach problems today, I approach them as he would, in a reasoned way. That's what makes me a Thomist, not being able to rhyme off everything he ever said. It means I can approach the problem of AI, I hope, something St. Thomas never imagined, like he would if he were around today. The human mind is malleable. It'll take on the form of what it's exposed to. And if we just expose it to endless facts, it'll be disjointed. It'll be flooded. To connect them and make a system and a framework takes time and application. To sum up and conclude, let's go back to Thomas and his ecstasy. After a lifetime of hard work, study, repeatedly encountering reality in the things of this world, Aquinas was rewarded with a transcendent vision of the real. Capital the, capital R. He was taken out of the moment, given a contemplative time, and that changed him forever. What I want to reiterate to you is that AI is a very, very powerful tool, capable of processing huge amounts of data, and much, much faster and accurately than we can and probably ever will be. It's a very, very powerful tool, but remember something about Plato's warning, right? That it was conveyed in handwriting. So Plato wasn't necessarily saying we should never write things down. He was just trying to get us to see that we can't rely too much on it. It's the same with AI. Use it. Use it, but use it wisely. You're short on time, get it to organize your notes, get it to summarize huge tomes, get it to highlight the key points, but never, ever, ever let it do the spade work of the study, because the process is important, okay? Because you're made in the image and likeness of God, because you have an intellect and a will, and because your intelligence, there's a difference of degree, sorry, of kind and not just degree, between your intelligence and that of AI, which again, just mimics human intelligence. If you give yourself to the process and trust the process, it will not only inform you, it will form you. So read little, but do read. Expose your minds to all manner of things and let them be formed by the reality. You were made in the image of God, so allow him to impress that more and more through the medium of his creation and through nature and through other real living people who are here as well. Give thanks for the gifts of your faculties, because it's not everyone in actual fact who is able to enjoy them to their full. And try to let yourself fall in love with what you study, even if it is peeing or accounting. These gifts are what make you free. They are how you see beauty in the fabric of the world. It's how you're able to love. And therefore, you're able to make judgments on truth, interrogate nature for the gems that it hides, and encounter real life. Don't shirk the desk and its labours. You're capable of bringing forth marvellous and original creations, always as a cooperator with the Creator of all, to whom be great glory and praise. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.